Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a self-made serial entrepreneur who has spent over half of his life building businesses. Plus, his attitude and his outlook in this conversation is infectious. He is the co-founder and CEO of Jamber, where the focus is in bringing art and commerce closer together and by creating technology to do the stuff people hate so they can do more of what they love. This was a super fun conversation to be part of, and I really think you're going to dig it. Now, let's hack Marcus Cobb. Email marketing. It can be so damn boring. Or it can be so damn awesome. It can. Email marketing is one of my favorite parts of being like an online entrepreneur. Absolutely. I find it fascinating. I find it intriguing. And I love having that direct contact with subscribers, with fans, with listeners, with readers, whatever it happens to be that I'm doing it at that point. Companies using marketing automation will see 53% higher conversions than those using traditional, or what I call boring, email marketing. Active Campaign will enable you to send perfectly timed messages in response to your customers' actions and behaviors. The best part is it's going to treat your email contacts as unique individuals, which they are, and you cannot forget that, rather than just sending everyone the same boring message over and over. Plus, Active Campaign is beautiful and easy to use, even for someone like me. There's no need to hire consultants because you can set it up for yourself. See why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution. Sign up right now for a 14-day free trial. Don't even need a credit card. How much better could that be? Visit activecampaign.com/hack. There's no training fees, there's no contracts, and pricing is absolutely accessible to anybody. Custom deal for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners right now. Free migration from your other email provider if you are using one. Your second month of service is absolutely free, and you're going to get a free one-on-one strategy session with their platform consultant. Start marketing smarter today. Get and convert more leads with ActiveCampaign. Go to activecampaign.com/hack and sign up for your 14-day free trial. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely, absolutely my pleasure. I'm glad we're going to get to sit down and do this, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's jump into it. Marcus, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That is, wow, a great introspective question. I would say for me, in my case, as an entrepreneur, I'm really good at seeing new opportunities in a macro way, macro patterns typically, that, but also the nuance of where to begin with really large problems. Overall, I really believe that in a well-stated problem is the solution. And my spidey sense tends to go off pretty consistently when that happens. That's been my one thing when entrepreneurs, I think, identifying new opportunities.
Whoa, I love it. I mean, there's not much else really, really important, especially in tech and music that you're in, is sort of combining those disparate sort of opportunities and combining them. But then let's talk about this. Lots of people can have big ideas. Lots of people can have what we could call quote unquote good ideas possibly, but they can't execute.
Right.
Mostly because they don't have that ability to go back to that beginning stage and break it down to where to start. So can you kind of walk us through how you do this?
Well, I've thought a lot about this over the years because I think in some ways I'm lucky that I started off as in technology and a technology entrepreneur because, you know, as a technologist, you're building something, a cool app or a game, whatever it may be, but it starts with one line of code every single time. And I believe we get trained almost in a way to take these really big ideas, but break it down. Okay, well, what's the first line of code that I write, or what's the first system that I build, and where do we begin? And for me, I've been a technologist going on, well, over half my life. So, you know, I started as a kid, and I think that's really fantastic training, if you will. It translates really well in the business. Okay, we're going to change the world. Okay, well, what house are we going to start in? So a lot of it, though, for me, comes down to, as an entrepreneur, I don't get caught up in total addressable market. Those things are premature questions, I believe, for any business. You know, when you get to 10 million a year revenue, 50 million of revenue, then that's a time to talk about TAM, in my opinion. But it is really important to think about value execution. Is the world better off for us having tried? That I care very much about.
Yeah, exactly. And when you start on an idea now, do you literally think we're going to change the world?
I'm only interested in ideas that will change the world. I think that there are a lot of great people out there with ideas. Going back to your question on execution, I honestly believe I'm here to create great places to work. So I've had the privilege of being in and out of startups, and I've seen what happens when a startup is really successful and the ripple effect that it causes. One place I worked at, I wish there was a time lapse of just the vehicles in the parking lot. So when we first started, there was probably rust on the parking lot from all of our collective cars, you know, being 20 years plus old. But as the company succeeded, everyone around it succeeded. And there's no faster way, better way, more sustainable way I know of to impact people's lives at that level.
I love it. Could you, do you think, have executed on Jamber as well without the experience in other startups previously?
No way at all. I think Jamber in many ways. So I've been an entrepreneur going on in and out of startups, sole proprietorships, everything from small little consulting companies that I started where I was really just a small business owner. I wouldn't call that entrepreneurship because you're not really starting anything new. You're just repackaging something there like a consulting company, which is a really established business model. I think key aspect of entrepreneurship is expanding business models. The other aspect is that we really, can I say this as simply as put, I think that we learn a lot. It's cumulative, but Jamber is the most complicated business that I've ever been in. And the joy there has been making it as simple as possible. And had I not had that experience, I don't think I'd be anywhere near prepared for it.
Yeah. Where does the complexity of the business come from? Like, do you see it as like a manpower complexity, a technological complexity, a marketplace complexity?
Yeah. Well, in our case, it's all the above. So except for the technology, one of the things I had a mentor tell me years ago when starting a business, there's always gonna be risk, but never to take risk on more than two fronts. And in his case, it was innovation front. He would call it the territory front, the actual business model being once never been tried before, and then the financial. If you take risk on any two of those or more that you can't recover from, you might want to reevaluate where you're starting. The good news about Jamber is that we are using last mile technology. So most of the technological problems we're solving have been solved before. We're using, you know, a SaaS model, we're using APIs, we're using machine learning, but some of the stuff that we're using has been out there in the marketplace for years now. So we're not figuring out how to go to Mars, if that makes sense. However, the music industry is highly siloed and fragmented, more than almost any other industry I know. Maybe the auto industry is a close second, and very competing agendas, and it hasn't really changed how it moves money and credits and attribution in over 100 years, literally. So what do you do in that space, and how do you come in as an outsider and say, we're going to help change it? And on paper, that's an insane idea. But I think what I've learned over the years is that my ultimate job as an entrepreneur is to serve the community around me and create great places to work. And when you approach a problem set or a market, at least as it fits my personality, and say, okay, we think we see a problem here. Is there a problem here? We can promise to fix it in this way. or you're interested in us fixing it that way before we even write a line of code, going back to the lean methodology, obviously. And they say, yes, we like that promise. And then you qualify that promise over time and you get as much feedback as you can, then you decide where to go. But even still, not to run on here, but we're experiencing, we didn't architect it to get the traction we're getting. Last year, our beta list was growing 54% month over month. And that was all organic growth. The promise we made resonated. And as an entrepreneur, you can't really plan for that. You just have to ride that wave, so to speak.
Yeah, you definitely do. So this is interesting because you said sort of as an outsider to tackle this big problem that hasn't been changed in 100 years. Does that mean you're not from the music industry at all? You just brought the tech side and found a problem?
Yeah, I was always knocking at the door of the music industry. Let's put it that way.
All right. But that's interesting because it seems like so many people coming into, people that I've interviewed that are in the music tech space typically start out as musicians. But then they also tend to struggle with that sort of merging of art and commerce. Like it conflicts with their in their head. And I think it stops them from doing a lot of things they want to do.
You touched on so many really important things there, Ed. So I am a creative first and foremost, and I won't go into all of it here. I'm sure it's for another show, but after technology, I had the great fortune of selling a small software company, my first solo exit. And at this point in time, I've been an entrepreneur for a techie 15 years doing 15 hours a day, and I was just burnt out on technology, right? This is through a very serendipitous series of events, I became a fashion designer. And as a fashion designer, I started my own little fashion company. It turned out to be women's intimate apparel first, very high end. I know, again, a great conversation for Martinis. And then I did that for 6-7 years and loved it. It changed my life. But the whole reason why it happened, I just got into that space because I was walking through a mall one day and I saw Victoria's Secret as an entrepreneur. I'm like, why are they the only one like this out here? You know, there's Walmart, there's Target, there's Mercedes, there's BMW. Why is there just Victoria's Secret? I was looking at it from a strictly real estate standpoint. And next thing you know, I'm a designer. And if I had thought about it on paper, my insecurities would have kept me from ever trying that. But we just kept falling forward. And next thing you know, it's absolutely changed my life, which led to Jamber in some ways.
Speaking of falling forward, it seems like your whole career has been that. Like it just, because it seems like, I'm sure going through it was like, this doesn't make any sense. But looking back, it's like, yeah, you're just falling forward into bigger and bigger and bigger things.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, if we had a great host of witnesses who have seen me through my life, they would have been a roaring standing ovation with you saying that. It has been mostly me falling forward. One of my frustrations with Jamber, as far as its public persona, is that a lot of people give us credit for this genius idea and this genius approach that we came into the market. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks, but we didn't really plan it out that way.
Well, that's okay. It's all right. Yeah. As long as you're pushing it in that direction.
Reverse genius, I call it, you know, we're reverse geniuses.
Do you see entrepreneurship overall as a creative endeavor?
100%, because it starts in the imagination. If you can't imagine what you're going to achieve and where you're going, you can't bring it to fruition. That's just fact. And I think all people are creative beings in that way. We all say, oh, it'd be so nice if it did this. And oh, could you imagine if we had this? That's where entrepreneurship begins.
I love it. And that brings us back to, I mean, your one thing is that ability to create and see new ideas and then execute them on them. So then that also takes us to like every business expert sort of nowadays talks about this 80-20 rule, which you've probably heard of, Marcus. You find that 20% that gets you the 80% of results, you do what you're good at, and you delegate the rest. Marcus, can you tell me something that you were absolutely not good at in your business?
Well, first of all, I would say it's very hard to do. It's easy to give entrepreneurs that direction on paper, but one of the most turbulent places emotionally, I believe, for entrepreneurs is when we go from this founder-led idea of one or two or three people in a room to a growing enterprise. So in Jamber's case, just two of us 2 years ago, and now we're over 20 people of people who are very capable of being autonomous and being effective and productive. That is very difficult transition for every entrepreneur I know, because you go from doing everything yourself and building that trust relationship with yourself to, by the time you get it, you know, diverging yourself and taking that trust and putting it into what's often brand new relationships for something that you've been putting your whole blood, sweat, and tears in nonstop, but you know it's the right thing to do. There's no ratio at that point in time. I think it's not the ratio because you're still working 40 to 170,000 hours a week. It's more about the initiatives that are executed really well without you, and understanding your job as a CEO or COO, whatever your founder role might be, is to, for example, I go broad. As a friend told me, if I'm the smartest guy in the room, we're screwed. Right? So, but when you're a founder, you are kind of the smartest guy in the room because you're the only one in the room. And that's a really intense change.
Yeah. So it's a transformation from founder only to CEO. And CEO of, it starts off as you and a co-founder, so two people, but now at over 20 people, is it a struggle to sort of like constantly evolve personally and professionally to stay ahead of that curve of, like you said, like surrounding yourself with really smart people, your team gets smarter and smarter and better, and you cannot maybe be the best at every aspect of your business anymore. Is it hard personally to stay ahead of that curve and feel like you're not falling behind?
100%. It's natural to, often entrepreneurs, we find a problem set because we're specialists. We specialize in certain things. In my case, I specialize in taking very natural use cases and finding a way to use technology to make your life easier. If something takes you a week to get done, I'm really interested in that red button that's going to help you get it done in 5 minutes. I'm here to serve people in that way. But you go from being a specialist to a generalist, and then surrounding yourselves with specialists. By nature, you can't be good at everything anymore. You know enough to ask the right questions and hard questions and keep people accountable, but you don't know necessarily every line of code underneath that particular application. You don't know every line in your sales contract or even every conversation they're having over drinks. You're not living in those moments anymore. And this is why the team part is so important. I think that A players, as we call them, these rock star people we meet that just come in, they do their job, they knock it out, and it's always done really well and adds a certain joy. They're so rare that we forget the value they can actually add when you have them on the team. And in my case, going back through that hiring process and building a team again, so I've been a director for Fortune 500 companies. I've been management for startups that grew one company from 20 million to 300 million in 5 years. And we went from 35 employees to near 200 employees in that same time. That was actually still even easier than going from two or three people to 30.
Wow. It's like, it's more of a transition in this stage, I guess. Like it's not even exponential from zero to
exponential.
To 20, yeah, it's infinite.
And it's such, like you said, it's the emotional, if I had to put it into one nutshell, it's your sense of identity. Who are you as an entrepreneur? Because if your identity is that I'm the guy that writes this code, or I'm the person that closes this sale, or I'm the person that designed this business model, which you have to have some type of ego to be an entrepreneur, in my opinion.
You do.
So, but now your ego has to constantly shift with the organization, and you're always wearing a different mask, a different shirt, a different identity. That is extremely difficult unless you remember that you're there to serve the greater good, unless you remember that it's actually not about you. It still stings a little bit, but it's coated with this joy of, but we're making a difference and this is what I'm here for.
Which it circles back to. I like that. Earlier in the conversation, you said a couple years ago, a mentor told you never take risks on more than two fronts. In this process from sole like founder and the only person on the team to a CEO leading a rapidly growing team, how are you using coaches and mentors?
Constantly. So I the first part is just general transparency. And fortunately for tech startups, this is a cultural phenomenon. We hear a lot about transparency. There are companies out there that have open sourced their culture decks or orientation decks like HubSpot. We hear a lot about transparency here in the States, in Silicon Valley. And that's the first part of it, because when people can see the problems, it allows for conversation. So you can get mentorship from, I had an intern one day walk into my office and tell me that my blog design really sucked in his opinion and he could fix it in a day. Yeah. So He was right. He did fix it in a day, and it was awesome. So that was a type of mentorship that he didn't mean it that way. But more from a framework perspective, and formally, I have an advisory board that really can go deep on any topic with me and call me in the carpet when needed to. The same is true for our investors as well. And then in my personal life, I have mentors that I can go deeper with still in my evolution.
So you highly, highly utilize their and leverage sort of their knowledge and experience.
I think you're stupid not to. I think every mistake we're going to make for the most part's already been made. So true. The way to avoid the majority of those mistakes is to give people with wisdom visibility into some of your decision processes. Now, the challenge with that is still maintaining your own line of thought. There have been multiple times where my advisors or mentors felt very, very strong about a particular direction. And I just knew that through my perspective, which is where Jamber came from, right, that this was the right way to go. And I'm allowed to make mistakes. And I'm allowed to understand why the mistakes I make. And that's an important part of it, too. You have to balance it out. Otherwise, your strategic vision becomes an overblend of everyone else's perspectives. The vision has to be unique to the entrepreneur because no one can see it the way you see it. No one can see Starbucks the way that a Howard Schultz can see Starbucks, right? So you still have to keep maintain your creative space and your heart and your alignment to what's important to you because you're seeing it through a different kaleidoscope and different color. That being said, these advisors and mentors have helped me skip many, many, many a pitfall, and that's what they're there for.
Yeah, and it's your job, I guess, to sort of wade through that and know what to take and what to bounce off and just keep the vision.
Yeah, and your body will tell you. You know, the things will. That's what I love about Andrew Mason's exit letter from Groupon when he left. It was so transparent. And if you read that as an entrepreneur, you can really empathize with the guy because he says, one of my biggest regrets, and I'm paraphrasing here, was letting a lack of data override what was best, what I knew was best for the customer. And as an entrepreneur, you're going to know in your gut more times than not what the right thing is to do. You know, it's going to keep you up at night. And when you have those kind of feelings, just pay attention to them and trust it. And if you're wrong, you're still going to be smarter either way. If it's a high risk area, just hedge your risk. In other words, taste test it first or test it in the market or A/B test it in the space and really find out if that's something you want to pursue.
I like it. So this is a good segue into projects and sort of, I guess, testing if that's what you do. But projects is a loose term. So whether it's like a new like customer acquisition project you have or a new product project, whatever that happens to be, it's going to be different. And this is part of the transformation from you as a co-founder to you now CEO leading a team of 20 plus people. But I would love to know, Marcus, what's the process when an idea either comes to you personally or is brought to you by someone in your team? What's the process that you go through right now, whether that's an internal gut process or a written process? But what do you go through to decide that a project is now worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources?
That's a really important question, John. I'll give you two short answers. I remember when I was younger, I used to ask a question that sounded so insightful and smart when I was younger. But it was like, I'm good at all these different things. Like, how do I know what to do?
I've heard that question before.
Yeah. The reality is the short answer it's taken me most of my life to learn is you do what you're most passionate about. Passion is the one fuel you have to overcome the obstacles of doing anything meaningful, period. Talent is great. Talent is something that's easy, for you, that's extremely harder for other people. But it's never really talent that wins overall in mass. It's passion. Now, the best is to have all of it, right? Have the talent and the passion and the experience, that's the great trifecta. So when it comes to Jamber, though, it's less is more. That's the discipline as a company. One of the first things that Steve Jobs did, as we all know, when he came back to Apple after over a decade of losing money at every enterprise he had, was he trimmed all the fat. I think he took it down from 5,000 product lines or something of that nature to many, many fewer than that. The same is true as an entrepreneurship. You have to, especially as a startup, less is more. You have to specialize in one area, master that area. In SaaS, for example, Jamber, we're getting a lot of traction today from other spaces. We start off in music, and before we knew it, we had interest from film, television, and then we had interest from healthcare, of all things. And then we had interest from What's another great example? Event management. These were not things we designed our platform for, but people found utility. So what do you do? What do you say yes or no to? To tie it off, there are really two aspects. In the case of the healthcare situation, as one of the largest healthcare networks in the world, we said yes if, in the sense that we're not going to touch it. Jamber's internal resources are going to be hyper-focused on Jamber's core clients delivering value, but you can license our technology for this in this way, and here's how we'll support that. That was a nuanced yes-ish. On the other hand, if a large film space is like, hey, we're right. Actually, television is a bigger one. Television has the exact same problems as music. Film's a little easier to approach. Film, a very, very large television network said, hey, will you guys come in and solve this problem for us? We're like, we're not there yet. So we had to say no, which my bottom line there is, as an entrepreneur, it's really about knowing what to say no to more than it is even knowing what to say yes to.
Yeah. And this idea of doing what you're most passionate about. So you struggled with this when you were younger. Now you figured it out. Is there something to it that when you say, or when somebody younger hears, do what you're passionate about, they tend to like look at their hobbies or something and then try and do something around that? With you and with Jamber, it seems like you have a passion to change the world, to highly impact people, not necessarily do what you like to do on Saturday afternoons as a business.
Yes. Yeah, that's really true. I think change the world is our broad passion, but I've been saying that since I was a kid. Change the world, man. But really, in Jamber's case, we want to change the world through making way for music and make way for creativity. We say that we call ourselves the Jamberites, and it's our mission in life to kill the monster. So a lot of people don't know, just to briefly touch on our value proposition. One day I was in the office while we're doing customer discovery. We're trying to build the LinkedIn for the music industry, right? That's the problem set I knew, because I'm a musician. And how do I find a drummer or a guitar player that I want to really vibe out with and jam with? But as we're going through an accelerator one day, which is this boot camp for startups, we had to do all these customer interviews to even see if we were solving a problem people cared about. Now, keep in mind, I've been an entrepreneur for a long time at this point in time. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, I already know what my customers want. We've got to figure it out, right? Like, I'm going to go through the paces here because you're making me do this, but we already know. And in one of those interviews, there was a table there with stacks and stacks and stacks of paychecks that were returned to sender. These were paychecks that went out to hundreds and hundreds of musicians all over the country, but were returned to sender either because the address was wrong, took too long to get to them, or the name was wrong. And we found out that there was millions of dollars sitting on these tables that went out to the right people. We're not talking about money that was being sat on, but came back because of the process between, as you touched on earlier, art and commerce. And between art and commerce is intellectual property, and that's governed by complicated laws, international laws, century-old processes, and it's super messy. And people's money and their credits were falling into that mess and never coming back out. That was emotional for us to see all that money there, because we know these musicians aren't making a killing, right? They're making sometimes just enough to do what they love. So we wanted to set that free. We wanted to kill whatever monsters were eating their money and eating their credits and killing their opportunities, and technology is kind of our sword, and that's how we see ourselves. So Make Way for Music is about pulling down this wall, this veil, this monster made of paperwork and processes, getting it out of the way so we can see what kind of music comes into the world, because we honestly believe that the entire world cares about that.
Wow, I love it. It's the visualization of this table full of returned checks just sitting there. And you're right, like, musicians just desperately need that money. Like 99.99% of them don't make hundreds of millions of dollars. That one fraction does.
That one fraction does. And it really, really is one fraction. And you touched on this already, but bring it to a close for me on this topic. We are outside the industry in that way. I haven't been a music industry exec before. Before this, I wasn't really well known in the industry. But you'll find often the disruptors do come from outside the space. And this is not a problem. This is the most important thing I would say to entrepreneurs you and I are getting a chance to talk to here. This is not the type of business model that would have looked really good on paper. In this kind of second phase of my entrepreneurship life, I really believe that the best problems don't look good on paper to solve. And Jamber went from just being a small workflow tool just to get these musicians paid faster by making sure that we got their information early and that it was right, to now really a project management system for creatives in any creative space all over the world. You can't plan that. It's what they talk about in the book, Innovator's Dilemma, a small, unattractive problem that you care about. But next thing you know, through execution, it becomes a de facto standard. And that's, if you look at the major trends from Rockefeller when he entered the steel and oil industries to Bill Gates with Microsoft, you're going to find the exact same pattern everywhere.
The best problems don't look good on paper.
That's so true. They don't look good on paper because you don't have enough information yet. But when you start pulling on that thread, you find out that you're actually walking into a whole different universe that no one saw before, and that's why it wasn't solved yet. If people knew how big the problem was, they would already have solved it. That's why they're with UberCar.com, before it was Uber.com, they had a hard time getting funding. No one saw a problem. Airbnb got more rejections than they were trying to give away a large portion of their company for just a few a few hundred thousand dollars because no one saw anything there. It looked horrible on paper. Who wants to stay in strangers' homes? You know, that's so who would ever do that? In Nashville, where I live, like, there's pedal taverns where people are riding on these bicycles that are powered by pedals while they drink beer. That sounds horrible on paper. They're always packed out. That's why you have to be a little quirky. You've got to be a little weird, a little strange, because there's nothing new in the norm. You're going to find your magic in the margin in the ways that you only think. And then you go vet that and package it and productize it in a way that people can consume.
Very well said. Very well said. All right, Marcus, this has been an absolute blast, man. I want to wrap up, if we can, on one final question for you.
Okay.
This idea I'm working with, calling the entrepreneurial gap, which, having talked to you, I think you might have experienced this. So as entrepreneurs, as creatives, as dreamers, we're always seem to be projecting our personal successes into the future.
Yes.
No matter what we accomplish in 1 month when you hit that metric, in 6 months when you hit that next metric, that's when you think you're going to see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know seconds before you hit that, 5 or 10 bigger, loftier goals are into the future.
Yes.
Which I agree, we need goals we need to pursue, but we also get stuck in this gap that from the outside, we can look really successful, but from the inside, it's always, always, always in front of us. So I would love it right now, Marcus, if you could stop, turn, and look behind you. You've been through a ton. You've had a lot of great experience. But if you could just tell me the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, tell me how you feel about this whole journey until today.
Wow. That's one of the best questions I've ever been asked. I appreciate that question because it's making me reflect. I've had a lot of money. I've had no money. I've had a lot of friends. I've had just a few friends. I've been homeless as a kid. I've been in international news as an entrepreneur and as a young man. It really comes down to the privilege of setting my hands to something every day and having a pillow to lay down at night. I feel if I have those two things, I'm pretty good. And if you throw in tacos and martinis with me, I'm even better. But this is why the ego is so important, because the ego is greedy and it never, ever has enough. It's never happy. It's impossible to, for example, if it was just me on a desert island, I don't think I would build a mansion. You know? And so I think there's some value in being the person that you would be on their desert island, and it's, you're freer to create the things you want to create. That being said, I like nice things, you know, and I think that you have to reward yourself and feed your soul. But if your identity, again, is coming too much from those things, it's not sustainable. So in a nutshell, I'll say like this, entrepreneur gap, it's not about just goals. I want to create something that outlives me. We all leave this earth in some fashion or the other. And I want to build something that is so big, it takes generations and generations and generations to even get close to the vision that we have. That's the only thing that got me back into the entrepreneurship game after I made a little bit of money in the space and after kind of had a name for myself in the Chicago area. The only thing that got me back up in the morning, which is a great, you should talk one day about the valley of despair after success in entrepreneurship, because it's real. The only thing that got me back up in the morning was getting back to a vision that I thought would impact people's lives for the better, that would outlive me and possibly shake the universe.
Beautiful answer, Marcus. Beautiful answer. So we've got to talk about Jamber in passing throughout this conversation. Now, could you please give the audience the pitch about Jamber and then where to track you guys down online?
Yeah, so in short, as fans, we never really think about the fact that it takes, you know, months and years to put these experiences we love, whether it's your favorite television show. I joke, unless you're a Game of Thrones fan, then you know exactly how long it takes to produce the next show. But in music is the same way. There's between art that we're talking about, getting to the studio and vibing out and creating an amazing song, and commerce, where you're actually getting paid for that. There's a lot of paperwork involved. There's a lot of bureaucracy involved. There are a lot of parties involved. I mean, you can have your paycheck be touched by 1,500 people before you get it. At Jamber, what we're doing is we're shrinking that gap between art and commerce by automating that workflow. We're essentially a workflow tool that can be applied to any industry. We're just starting out in a very complicated one that we care about in the music industry. And the result of that is that we simplify the paperwork. We make sure everyone's credits are accurate so they can get more opportunities down the line and people can celebrate what they've done. And last but definitely not least, we get them paid a lot faster. If you're a guitar player on a recording, it can take you 3 months to 2 years to get your paycheck. And it's our goal at Jamber by this summer to make sure you get your paycheck in less than 2 weeks. It's at jamber.com, J-A-M-M-B-E-R.com. And we're pretty accessible. We're on Twitter at Jamber Music, Instagram too, which the team does a great job with that. And you can reach me, hello@jamber.com.
Very cool. Jamber Music on Twitter. Jamber CEO is you on Twitter.
That's right.
Jamber.com is the website. And then hello@jamber.com is the email address if you want any follow-up questions for Marcus. I'll link to all that in the show notes when you're done working out, jogging, walking your dog, whatever it is you're doing right in this moment. Those will be there for you, as well as I'll find a link to Innovator's Dilemma, the book, excellent, excellent book that I recommend, and also that exit letter from Andrew of Groupon. I'm going to see if I can track down a link to that for you so you can also give that a read and know what the heck Marcus was talking about. Marcus, once again, man, thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for sharing so openly. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks so much for giving us this platform and this virtual support group for entrepreneurs. I really appreciate it, man. I look forward to talking to you in the future.
I've now been using ActiveCampaign for almost entire months within my business. And it is my favorite tool to use in my business. It's simple, it's easy to use, and it's super effective the way it listens, learns, and adapts to how my subscribers act, open, read, listen, click through, all those things. It's a fascinating email marketing tool that I think you should try. If you want to see why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution, you can get a 14-day free trial right now without even using a credit card. Go to activecampaign.com/hack. Not only that, for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, I've got you a special deal. Free migration. So if you have an email list or email lists and templates and all that stuff over at another email provider, don't worry about it. We're going to move you over to ActiveCampaign absolutely for free. Plus, whatever service level you choose after your 14-day trial, you're going to get your second month absolutely free. Plus, this is cool. A free one-on-one strategy session with a platform consultant. You can even use this during your free trial to sort out how this platform works and see how to utilize it in your business. Start marketing smarter today. Go to activecampaign.com/hack and get started with your free trial. Well, that was a lot of fun. I thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that. There was something like when, say my first like 30 or 40 episodes of the show, that was a long time ago now, but I would get off a call and I would just like pace around my office and house because it was exciting. It really sort of drove me. And it's been a long time since that has sort of happened. And it's not that I don't thoroughly enjoy the conversations, but I think with Marcus, I feel like I didn't know enough about him maybe during the conversation. And so the connections we got to make, I guess, through that whole merging of art and commerce and his love of music is, and the whole, like, just, he's done it himself. He's just gone from thing to thing to thing, job to job, even, and business to business, just building up and creating that sort of momentum. And I really, really, I dig that about people. I get excited by it. I think that I've sort of done the same thing. And I like when people don't get sort of pegged into a position where they feel like that's where they have to always be. It's an evolution and keep pushing forward and you never know where you'll end up. So the excitement really comes from, it caught me off guard. And it was just a super fun conversation. Once I got done, I was just pacing around and like, maybe I drank too much coffee. I'm not sure. But anyways, it was a lot of fun to talk to Marcus. And now though, we've reached the point in the show where it's going to be interesting because I get to go back and I get to listen to it. I get to listen to the conversation the way you got to hear the conversation. So that's what I did. I went back and I listened. And then I went back and I listened again. That second time through the conversation, there was several things that I had missed that Marcus had said. So I went back again. And then that time through, there was one thing. There was one thing that Marcus had said, and it had slipped by. But this time when I heard it, it was so very, very clear to me. It was the one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
There have been multiple times where my advisors or mentors felt very, very strong about a particular direction. And I just knew that through my perspective, which is where Jamper came from, right, that this was the right way to go. And I'm allowed to make mistakes. And I'm allowed to understand why the mistakes I make. And that's an important part of it, too. You have to balance it out. Otherwise, your strategic vision becomes an overblend of everyone else's perspectives. The vision has to be unique to the entrepreneur because no one can see it the way you see it.
And that's the hack. Marcus, Marcus, Marcus. I love this. I really, really love this. The idea that there's like, you're going to need advisors. We've talked about this a ton. And you out there listening, you know, like you need advisors or coaches or mastermind groups or other people, other entrepreneurs that you can surround yourself with and bounce ideas off, get feedback from people who have been places that you are trying to go and can kind of make sure you don't make mistakes that are super obvious to them. But you have to make sure that you stay true to your vision. Take every bit of information from everyone else as well as you can. And yes, be coachable. That whole idea, you have to accept that you need to accept other people's information as openly as possible, yet you got to stay true to like your gut. That feeling that tells you where you need to go, where you need to take your product, where you need to take your service, where you need to go as a business is up to you. And that vision can get diluted if we take, like Marcus says, it gets that sort of dilution because we're taking too many different ideas and we lose that focus of what it was that you are trying to create, right? It's, we need advisors, we need coaches, we need masterminds, absolutely. But we are the ones who are guiding the ship. We are the ones who are on the hook at the end of the day if it doesn't work. We need to find a way to balance that. And it's really hard. It's really crucial to do this. And I'm not saying I have the solution, but you have to be aware. When somebody is advising you and you disagree with them because your gut tells you to, go with that. Go with your gut on those cases. If you make a mistake, which Marcus goes on to say, is like, I have the ability to. It's okay if I make a mistake, but then realize, like, if you follow your gut and it ends up being wrong against somebody else's advice, think back. Was their advice actually correct? Then that doesn't make you quote unquote wrong. It only makes you wrong if you don't learn from that. And next time you come to that sort of fork in the road where this person's advising you, she's telling you what is going to happen and your gut's telling you something different, maybe you should weigh her opinion a little bit more this time. It's learning from these things that allows them to not permanently be mistakes. Marcus, thank you so very, very much. Well, that was a lot of fun. I really, really, truly enjoyed that conversation. And I hope you enjoyed it as much. So you are on, you're on either like an iPhone right now, or you're on one of those Android devices. I don't know what it is you're listening to this on, but whatever it is, whatever, if you're on Stitcher, if you're on iTunes, if you're on Google Play, if you're on iHeartRadio, could you go there right now? It takes like 2 or 3 minutes to go there, figure out how to just leave a rating and a review, 1-star, 2-star, 5-star, whatever it happens to be, honestly, just leave it. I would totally appreciate it. It helps so damn much. And I get tired of just sort of asking it, so I haven't asked it in a while. But I'm going to ask it right now. It takes like, come on, maybe it'll take 5 minutes just to figure out the weird technology of it, but come on. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's the website. I'm going to have Marcus's show notes over there for you. Links to Jammer on Twitter, as well as Marcus himself on Twitter, and the Innovator's Dilemma book I'll track down, and that exit letter. I'm going to find that, and it'll be there waiting for you on hacktheentrepreneur.com. While you're there, get on the email list if you'd like. It's a good spot to hang out as well. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so very much for stopping by. I absolutely appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.